Welcome to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win, a monthly podcast by the U.S. Human Rights Network, addressing human rights issues in the United States. I'm your host, Sacagawea Hall. In this podcast, we speak with Monique Hardin and Andrea Carmen about Rio Plus 20, the concerns around the proposal for a green economy, and the need for a rights-based approach to sustainable development.
Rio Plus 20 is the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development being held this June in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The gathering is the 20th anniversary of the 1992 Conference on Environment and Development, also known as the Earth Summit. Parallel to the UN official conference, thousands of people from social movements around the world will gather for a week-long People's Summit. I'm joined by Monique Hardin, who is the co-executive director of the Advocates for Environmental Human Rights, and Andrea Carmen, the executive director of the International Indian Treaty Council. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.
So both of your organizations are sending representatives to the Rio Plus 20. Can you tell us why the gathering is important and what do you hope to accomplish there? And we can start with Andrea.
Yes, indigenous peoples, of course, are survival is inextricably linked to the survival of the natural world, the environment, as we call it, you know, the animals, the plants, the water, the air. Actually, that's the case for all human beings, but sometimes it seems that indigenous peoples, because of our closeness to our subsistence foods and our way of life, but also because of our cosmovision and worldview, our spiritual practices, are very strongly aware of our responsibilities as human beings to the natural environment. And I think one thing that's very clear that needs to be said to begin with is in the last 20 years, the world's environment has deteriorated sharply. That the good decisions and the progress that was made, at least in bringing concerns about the environment, toxics, climate change, the diminishing biodiversity to the forefront of world discussions was a very positive thing in terms of human beings in general and the international arena, the United Nations recognizing that human survival is definitely on the line here. However, many of the mechanisms, conventions that came out of that process, we've not seen a lot of progress in actually slowing down the impacts of human degradation of the environment. The other issue for us is, of course, you know, one major landmark that has happened since the first Earth Summit is the adoption of the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples that recognizes a range of rights of Indigenous peoples, including, you know, our rights to our land, our waters, our subsistence foods, right to the productive capacity of our natural environments, right to health, many other rights that are linked and dependent on keeping the land and water and air clean. And so we have now a platform to stand on. And one of the things that is our demand and has been backed up by UN bodies like the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is nothing that comes out of this world conference should be in violation of human rights, and in particular in the rights recognized in the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And unfortunately, we're seeing many of the proposals, both in the past, things like carbon trading with climate change, you know, the green economy proposals coming out, not considering the rights of Indigenous peoples or really human rights of any peoples or persons in general. So these are real strong concerns that we're bringing to our participation, and we are both participating in the main events and conferences as well as holding separate conferences of Indigenous peoples there to refine our proposals and strategies among ourselves and with other allies.
For us, the Rio Plus 20 Summit is an opportunity for to exchange ideas and information on how we can strengthen and continue to build momentum for environmental justice here in the United States,
as well as link with allies across the globe who will also be participating in the summit in Rio. Advocates for Environmental Human Rights is a public interest law firm, and we contribute to the environmental justice movement by focusing on the legal obligations of our U.S. government to protect our human rights. That includes better protection than what we have now for preserving and sustaining the environment that we all live in. I think one of the things that we anticipate happening at the summit is sort of a Sankofa perspective, where we're looking back over the last 20 years when the first Rio summit took place, and also looking forward and celebrating as well as analyzing and sharing what we presently have been able to achieve and where our challenges remain. In the United States in particular, when we're focusing on issues of environmental sustainability and justice and health, our government really lags behind a number of other countries that have been able to link both human rights with environmental protection. In the United States, we don't do that, and that's part of the work that we have at Advocates for Environmental Human Rights, is holding our government accountable to human rights standards. And the Rio Plus 20 gathering is a stage in which we can show what that would mean, what a different United States government would look like that really honored and respected and protected the human rights of all people, especially as it relates to environmental quality and sustainability.
I wanted you all to comment on this idea of a green economy. So the focus of Rio 20 seems to be this, you know, quote-unquote green economy. The UN frames it as the theme as how to build a green economy to achieve sustainable development and lift people out of poverty, and how to improve international coordination for sustainable development. But many people within social movements around the world are actually concerned about the solutions that are resulting in looking at addressing sustainable development. They see it as a further commodification and monopolization of nature, the violation of human rights, and the deployment of high-risk technologies as being a result of this gathering. What are some of the concerns that you have? I think Andrea already touched on this. And how do social movements counter the solutions that are being brought by governments and actually also the corporations that participate in this conference?
You know, the problem that we're seeing with regards to more and more interest around environmental preservation and sustainability is the work and agendas of corporate polluters to manipulate that effort and that focus and commitment around what so-called market-based solutions that are actually driving people away from and off of the places that they call home, whether it's forests, farmlands, communities, villages, not just here in the United States, but globally. And so, you know, for us, we believe that, you know, from the people, there are solutions that need to be the priority for both international and sovereign nations' governance. Right now, we have tremendous pressure from corporate polluters to drive the agenda around climate change and environmental sustainability, with various concocted ideas that would profit them monetarily, but further impoverish people around the world. And so that's got to be combated by looking at, real solutions that people who are dealing with these directly confronted with toxic exposures, depletion of natural resources, poisonous chemicals in their air, water, and land are bringing to the summit. And we see that those focus around community self-determination and legal protection, a legal framework that supports that. That also means changing the way in which governmental systems work at both the sovereign nation level, like for the United States government and other countries, as well as internationally in terms of binding agreements. that, you know, are central to those working and ensuring a sustainable future for all of us is ensuring that human rights are protected. Here in New Orleans, we have, you know, the largest major environmental disaster in the history of the United States with the BP oil drilling disaster. Right now, the solutions on the table presented by federal and state governments, as well as BP, are not about preserving, sustaining, and changing the way in which energy is produced. And that's what needs to happen. Right now, you know, we're spinning ourselves into a situation where people will not be able to maintain the places that they call home because of environmental degradation brought about by the, you know, activities and operations of corporate polluters that are approved and sanctioned under very weak and flawed environmental standards. And that's where the change has got to be. If you just look at the presidential election that we have now in the United States, there's a false choice being presented over halting environmental regulations because it restricts economic development versus maintaining the environmental regulations that we have. Both is not a viable choice because what we really need to do is advance environmental protection to ensure that our human right to health, our human right to life, our human right to live without with equality and freedom from racial discrimination are all being abused and violated under the current standards. And so that's what, you know, where change needs to happen. And I think, you know, galvanizing folks with, you know, a commitment to environmental preservation because it's about their lives, it's about their future, it's about their, you know, present and future generations is an opportunity where we can, you know, continue to grow the move towards the change that we all need.
Okay. Andrea?
Yes, I agree with everything that Monique said, as always. But I want to add a couple other perspectives from the experience and perspective of Indigenous peoples. I should say that I'm one of two members from Indigenous peoples in North America on the Global Steering Committee, which is made of Indigenous peoples of all the regions of the world, for Rio Plus 20. And when we had our preparatory meeting to begin to discuss what our positions would be, we did have a representative of the UN Environment Program present the formula that they're developing for what's being called proposal for green economy, which is going to be very central to the discussions. And you can look at the preparatory and outcome documents for Rio Plus 20 to see that this is really a core piece. And one is the support of Indigenous peoples. And we began by saying that one of the principal rights in the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples and one of the true defenses that we have for protecting our homelands against unsustainable development and extractive industries is the right to free, prior, and informed consent. And the emphasis here is prior. You know, nobody consulted with Indigenous peoples while they were developing this plan that they're calling green economy. And we found, you know, even back 10 years ago in South Africa at the World Conference, the mining industry came with a proposal called green mining. And it was denounced all around as a so-called greenwashing of the same old policies and practices that have got us all, you know, as the planet, you know, let alone peoples on the planet, into the brink of destruction and non-survival of our future generations. So, you know, we're very wary of the same formula for development being tweaked slightly. You know, we'll plant a few more trees or, you know, trade a little bit more carbon, et cetera, you know, and calling it green when the basic and fundamental relationship of the human family to the natural environment is not being challenged. And Indigenous peoples that have answers that are proven since time immemorial for sustainable way of life in relationship to the natural world are not even being consulted. We're being asked to rubber stamp or maybe, you know, tweak a few words from the plans already made. And we've already lived through hundreds of years of that kind of program. And we've seen, you know, how that model for development, you know, has taken us. Monique referred to, you know, a rights-based approach, and that's strongly what Indigenous peoples are advocating, as well as approach that respects the traditional knowledge and practices of Indigenous peoples that are proven over time to be sustainable, whether it's agriculture without pesticides, whether it's protection of biodiversity, you know, not patenting life and selling the genetic codes and altering, you know, the genomes of our seeds and plants. You know, whether it's not polluting our water that all of us live on and all the things that we live on, you know, these are the kinds of sustainable and very basic and practical contributions that Indigenous peoples can make that are not being considered or consulted. We are happy because of the work of Indigenous peoples at the preparatory meetings leading up to Rio Plus 20 that in the last version of the outcome document, which will be tweaked and finalized in Rio, there is a recognition of the important role of culture in development. There is a recognition of the important contributions of human rights to the discussion, including the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples. But we know that many states, as well as the corporations that are strongly involved, as Monique mentioned in these discussions, are challenging those kinds of recognitions, at least, of a new way of looking at development coming out of this World Conference, are being challenged and, you know, have been proposed for deletion. And so we know we have our work cut out for us, not just as Indigenous peoples, but all of our allies in the human community that recognizes that our rights and survival are at stake, but also recognizes our responsibility to the natural world, to Mother Earth, and to our future generations. And whether or not the proposals for green economy are truly sustainable and truly what we would call green remain to be seen. We're very concerned about some of the proposals and some of the fine print that go along with the proposals that are being made. And we think that as Indigenous peoples, what we need is an entire new paradigm for development that is environmental, of course, economic, the basic needs, the survival needs of human beings need to be, you know, taken care of. And this planet is certainly abundant enough, you know, to serve those needs if they're done, you know, in a sustainable way and in a way that doesn't, you know, contribute towards the accumulation of wealth and benefit for a very, very small fraction while everybody else left to fend for themselves or starve or be driven off their land and, you know, become wage workers. So I think these are some of the questions that are going to be on the table, and the right to free, prior, informed consent certainly, you know, is a good starting point for Indigenous peoples in discussions about development that affects our lands and our ways of life.
Yeah, it sounds like it's important for organizations like Advocates for Environment and Human Rights and International Indian Treaty Council to be there and to be present to influence the outcome document and to at least voice what the solutions are coming from the community in opposition to the solutions coming from corporations. Thank you.
Thank you.
The U.S. Human Rights Network is dedicated to building a people-centered human rights movement in the United States. For more information about the network and how to become a member, visit www.ushrnetwork.org. We also want to hear your feedback. Get in touch with us by emailing info@ushrnetwork.org. Thanks for listening to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win. Join us next month.